Hello, my name's Jane Dacre. Welcome to the second season of Medical Women Talking. The podcasts are made up of conversations with some amazing women doctors who've had incredible careers. Being a woman and a doctor can be challenging, but these conversations are designed to be shared to help those women aspiring to fulfilling careers and to leadership roles. We hear a lot of negative stuff about medicine these days, but these inspiring stories show us that medicine can still be brilliant. Listen and be inspired. Today, I'm talking to Dr. Sarah Clark. Sarah is not only a female interventional cardiologist, which makes her rather rare, she's also the fourth female president of the Royal College of Physicians. She's had a fantastic career, and she's going to share it with you today.
Can we start off by you just telling me a little bit about your career so far? So, for example, when did you decide to become a doctor?
Thanks, Jane. So when I was at school, I was actually more of a physical scientist rather than a biological science. I did maths, further maths, physics, chemistry, and didn't really know what I wanted to do. Thought I'd go and teach or do actuary or accountancy. I didn't really know much about what they were, what they involved. But so when I applied to university, when I actually got my A levels, I decided to take a year out and have a think. And I noted an advert in the Surrey Comet for a research assistant at the Royal Marsden in Sutton in Surrey. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting. I'll go and do that. And at the same time, I was sitting the entrance exams to Cambridge. So I went along to the Royal Marsden and met Professor Trevor Poles, whose twin was also there working in paediatric oncology. And Trevor was an oncologist, breast physician. And I had an absolutely fabulous year. They were really got me involved. I went on the ward rounds, I went into clinics, and basically I was measuring tumour sizes for some of the trials and documenting it all. So they're responsible for my first publication, before the age of 20. And while I was there, they were very encouraging about career medicine, and I began to realise the opportunities that were there. So when I applied for medicine, and I applied to go to Girton and sat the exam, and I got in seventh term. So having finished at the Marsden, I went up to Girton and start. That's where my medical career started. And I did my 3 years there. And then I decided to stay on in Cambridge. I enjoyed living in Cambridge, having sort of lived in London for years, and went to Addenbrookes to complete my clinical component of the degree.
So what sort of background do you come from, Sarah? Do you have doctors in your family?
No doctors at all. All engineers. Engineering really.
Gosh, so it's quite quite a change. So then you qualify as a doctor, I assume, and you're a cardiologist. There aren't that many female cardiologists. So why cardiology?
You're right, there aren't enough women cardiologists, absolutely. I did my rotation at Addenbrookes, and the different jobs I did was renal medicine, oncology, cardiology was one of them, and dermatology. I liked cardiology because it was technical, and because I come from the sort of physical science background, I like the technical aspect of it. I was very practical. So I'm very practical, so I like the hands-on. It seemed very relevant to across medicine, and it had the sort of acute element as well as the chronic element to it. So I enjoyed my time doing my cardiology junior role, and then decided to apply for the registrar rotation, which actually happened to be in Cambridge, and took me to Papworth, where obviously I started going into the cath lab, and realised that the interventional side of it was for me, because the speed at which technology changes, the hands-on, the acuteness, the having to respond quickly, is an ever-evolving specialty, and I like that pace and having to make quick decisions.
But presumably you were in quite a minority during that career progression. Did that bother you at all?
No, didn't bother me at all. And I was well aware that I was, there weren't many women in cardiology at that time. Didn't concern me. I wouldn't say it was an easy road. I had to deal with some decisions which I felt weren't fair. But I decided to hold my own and was very determined to get through.
What sort of thing wasn't fair?
So I think when there were suggestions about where you would rotate to, and the suggestion that I might want to sort of do general cardiology and perhaps not the interventional side because I might want to have a career break at some stage. So whereas for me, I was totally committed to doing intervention, and I had to, you know, work hard to get had a fellowship abroad in the States in Boston for a year. And so in going there, it was great because it actually enabled me to flourish more. But it was in order to get through that, yes, there were barriers that maybe I should do something more general with general medicine, you know, rather than go down a specialty that was competitive, long hours, out of hours as well. And the suggestion that, you know, that was probably going to be a more difficult career pathway for me.
So I have to say, you don't look like someone who chooses the easy path, because not only have you had a career in cardiology, but you've also got into medical leadership. So what were your motivations for going for leadership positions?
So when I, having become a consultant at Papworth, we were in the old hospital, and at that time it was beginning the sort of concept of working in regions and working collaboratively across hospitals, and was all beginning to evolve. So I got involved in developing the heart attack service because it was very relevant to what I was doing anyway, and it was something I could take on. I became clinical director at an early stage, partly because there had been a long gap between the previous consultant being appointed and me coming in. So I became a clinical director quite quickly for cardiology, and got involved in more the regional work and developing the heart attack service, not only at Papworth, but across the region. And that was really rewarding, working with like-minded people, leaders, forward-thinking, wanting to deliver optimal services across organisations, getting people on board to do it, because here we're now talking about 24/7 on call, getting out of bed, going in at all hours. It was a very different concept to what had happened before, but technology had advanced as well, because when I first started, we weren't using stents. So stenting has, you know, completely revolutionised what we can do, or what we could do, we still can do. So I got very involved in projects at an early age, which I really enjoyed. And so it was partly the heart attack service, but then what kept popping up was redesign and movement of Papworth Hospital into Cambridge. And so I became involved in the sort of design and delivery of the new hospital, which took place over several years, because a lot of debate whether we should move or not. It kept going backwards and forwards. But ultimately it got to the stage where we could spend some time. We spent time with various different engineers and developers to look at different designs of the new hospital in Cambridge at the campus. And it was just fascinating to learn about how a hospital works and how it can work optimally. So we decided that the hospital had to be designed around the patient pathway. So no inpatient meets an outpatient, even if they're going into any scanning room or anywhere in the hospital. So we've managed to separate outpatients, inpatients completely, single rooms, all, you know, in the same design, so that if there is a cardiac arrest, you can go into any room and it's going to look exactly the same, and you know where everything is. Same with theatres, same with cath labs. So there's this it was really interesting to actually think very carefully about the patient pathway and what patients needed, what they wanted, what was going to give them a good experience, whether they're an outpatient or an inpatient. So that was really enjoyable. And it's every time I drive over the railway bridge to go into work every day at Papworth, I'm not every day at the moment, but whenever I drive in, it's always a pleasure to see this wonderful building that I feel I had a part of. And that was very rewarding.
Fantastic achievement. So presumably you also broadened out to be working with different members of the team, because that can't have only been doctors.
Sure. No, it was obviously doctors. It was the nurses, the radiographers, working across organisations as well, because Papworth being a tertiary centre was being fed by hospitals around us. So we needed to make sure that everyone was on board and we could develop pathways to make sure the patients were coming in appropriately. So it was a, yes, it was working within the team at the hospital, but also a much wider team. And getting people on board, this is new facility, this is what we can do. And it's not just standalone, it's actually for the region. And of course, it's also a national centre as well.
So was it that, because you then moved on to national leadership roles, starting in cardiology, how did you take that step?
So when I was a registrar, I went to one of the conferences and they invited me to do some reporting. So I had a dictaphone and went round and interviewed people like Roger Boyle and we put it up on the website very early on. And so became involved, set up as a roving reporter scheme for the conferences. And then after that, I was then sort of brought into the fold at the British Cardiovascular Society and sat on the programme committee, education committee, and became, then got elected to be vice president for education at the British Cardiovascular Society, which then meant I was responsible for developing an education portfolio, but also the national conference, which my predecessor Ian Simpson had started to transform, but we completely changed it into something that was very much more designed around tracks. So trainee track, revalidation track, education track, intervention track, etc. You know, we really redesigned it so that people could see very clearly when they were coming into a conference what experience they wanted to have, or they wanted to go for specialty training, or they wanted to have more general training. And developed an education zone where we had simulators and hot topics where people could do very, very quick updates on things. So we did a lot of change there, which was really rewarding to see. And it significantly increased the number of people that came to the conference because it became more relevant. So I really enjoyed doing that. And after that, it was suggested that I stood for president. So I stood for president and was successful and became the first female president at the British Cardiovascular Society. And I'd have to say, sadly, there hasn't been another woman yet, but I keep encouraging all the my female interventional or general cardiology colleagues, whatever, to think about it, because it was a very rewarding time. And at the time, I really enjoyed working with a lot of my colleagues as president there, to trying to develop or embrace cardiology as it's evolved over the last few years.
And so how did you then move over to the broader Church of the Royal College of Physicians?
I suppose when I stopped being president, or when that term finished, I'd become engaged more in the improvement programs, national improvement programs, such as Getting It Right First Time. So I was involved in the GERFT Getting It Right First Time for cardiology, and worked with Professor Simon Ray from Manchester in going around and doing all the visits and looking at how we could improve cardiology services. This was just before lockdown. And then at the time, the clinical vice president role came up at the college. And it seemed to me, I spent all my time in cardiology, but thought actually there's more I can do, there's more I'd like to do across medicine. And, it's the same principles of how you go about doing things and assessing and deciding what you're going to do and delivering would be the same. So I thought I would apply for that role. It's an elected role. And it was great because I was successful, which gave me the opportunity to think slightly more outside the box of not just cardiology anymore, but everything that I'd learned, all the principles, the different experiences that I'd had were completely relevant across the different specialties. So it enabled me to bring together a wider group of people to look at the problem more generically. And so that's how I became involved in the college.
And then president,
yes.
It isn't always a bed of roses, though, is it? As I know to my own, I bear the scars myself. So do you want to mention some highs and some lows so far? You've been doing the job for about a year now.
Yes. Highs are very much the people that I'm working with within the college, but also it's a huge privilege, and I felt this very much with GERFT when I went out, visited trusts and met other people in trusts and looked at how they were working and trying to sort of work with them to improve things. And I think for me, the highs are the visits, the trust visits I do for the college as well. So this time it's not specialty based. It's more based on meeting the trainees, meeting the consultants, and then meeting the senior management team to understand across the spectrum, what are the issues? What can I help with? What can I advise? And what can we recommend and certainly recommend to the senior management teams, and highlight things that perhaps they aren't aware of and need to be aware of, or messages that don't seem to be getting through sometimes. So for me, being on the road and visiting the different trusts is always something I'd enjoyed as doing GIRFT, and it's the same at the college. So meeting different people and meeting people in different specialties and trying to work outside my comfort zone. So I do one day a week interventional cardiology now, go back and do my day job, I suppose, what has been my day job for many years. But the rest of the time, it's actually trying to make sure that it's working outside of the box and across the different specialties and medical specialties in general medicine, acute and emergency care. And I think another highlight for me is working with the other presidents as a team, particularly when we're facing the challenges that we've got in the NHS. So the academy is a collection of all the different presidents in the different specialties. And we're a good bunch, I think. We work really well together. We've got similar thoughts about how we should do things. We're very good at bouncing off each other. Also very good at supporting each other, because you mentioned the lows. Of course, there are lows. And I think one of the biggest challenges nowadays is social media. It can be cruel. It can be lonely. And it's trying not to take it personally in any way. And, you know, having the support of people around you, not only in the college, but from other presidents who, like you say, you know what it's like, and you don't know what it's like until you do the job. So the fact that they know what it's like and they support you, and the minute something happens, there's a phone call, there's a, you know, WhatsApp, is really good, because it actually makes you feel, you know, you're not alone. Yes, you're absolutely right. It can be quite lonely at times, and it can feel like a personal attack. But you absolutely have to not take it as that. I'm very lucky. I've got support. I mean, at home, I've got really good support. So it's very easy for me to go home and rant for a bit and then get it off my chest and then move on. It's not easy. However, the positives far outweigh the negatives.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Social media can be absolutely vicious and often comes along being vicious at a time when you least expect it to. Can I you mentioned a little bit about having support at home, because often a very high achieving woman in a relationship comes across difficulties in your home life. How does that all work for you?
So I don't have children of our, but I'm married and I've got a husband who is a bit older than me, but he did general practice for many years in Cambridge. So we met in Cambridge, not at university, but after we qualified. And he was a general practitioner in Cambridge for many years, but also was somebody who got involved in improvement and developed out of our services and things. So we're sort of quite like-minded. And so he understands things that I do and can support in that way, and the things that I do and the frustrations, etc. But now he works for NHS Digital, which he really enjoys. So he's got a little bit more time than I have. So he's now supports me, which is fantastic. He's interested in what I do, interested in meeting the people that I work with, and very good at being a sounding board for ideas that I have, what I want to do, and also when things aren't going well, helping me understand perhaps what I could do differently, or am I right? I've got to think about different perspectives. You know, he's very good at doing that. So I'm very lucky, very lucky. Jane, got a good partner, good team. We're a good team.
It sounds great to have that support. So a lot of the people who listen to this podcast will be considering whether or not they go on to leadership positions. Is there any advice that you would give to people coming through, things to look out for, things to be aware of?
I think if you're somebody who likes not just to do the job, but to think about different ways of doing things or leading your team and developing your team and going forward, it is important to do a leadership course of some sort, just so that you get to understand the principles and how to work with people and how to drive things forward, drive change. And one of the courses I went on was a Women Transforming Leadership program in Oxford. It was just women, but it was women across lots of different careers, you know, finance, lawyers, medics. We're a real mixed bag. And it was residential, so we were locked up together for a whole week. And we had various challenges to pose upon us to get through. And I think that week that I spent in Oxford, I learned so much about not just how to do things and how to work with, but also you learn about yourself and what sort of person you are and how you can and should try and adapt to different situations. So I think it's really important to get some basic grounding and do a course where you can spend some time with other people in a safe space and talk about, you know, the challenges and perhaps things that you find more difficult, things you find easier, how you get through things. You learn so much. And I think once you've started to develop those skills, as you start doing different things, you begin to learn how to do, you know, not everything always goes right, as you know. So you learn from everything that you do, but you've got a way of coping with it and developing yourself as you go along. So it is a sort of a developmental process, I think, as the leader. You know, the different things that I've done, I can see how each of the different roles I've had, I've been able to build upon personally as a person, but also it's enabled me to take on some more, you know, tougher challenges like being president at the RCP. My advice would be to get some grounding in principles and also build that network of people around you. So I'm still in touch with my group from Oxford from all those years ago, and you know, we if anyone has a problem, this WhatsApp goes and we all try and dip in and help each other. And so you must build a network around you of people that you trust that you can go to. And there's several people that I've got, well, a lot of people that if I had a particular problem, I would know who my go-to person was who could help me with that. And it's really important to have a network of people around you.
Very wise words. Really grateful to you for your time. So, Sarah, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Medical Women Talking. It's been a privilege to spend time with all these medical women. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this season. Don't forget, there are many other interviews in season 1.